to the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections podcast, which is called Lockup Lowdown. The goal of this podcast is to provide listeners with information pertaining to all aspects of corrections, one issue or one topic at a time. I'm your host, DOC Communications Director Susan McNaughton. Today we will talk about services available through the Pennsylvania Office of Victim Advocate. And joining us to discuss this issue today is Karen Laird, who serves as Program Administrator and Outreach Coordinator. Thanks for joining us, Karen.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Great. It's been a while since we've spoken to officials from the Office of Victim Advocate. So I'm so pleased that you were able to join us. In preparation for the podcast, I did visit your agency's website, and I'm going to share that now with our listeners. The Office of Victim Advocate's website is www.ova.pa.gov. And under the programs menu, I found a lot of information about all of the programs offered, some of which actually take place in our state prisons and involve our inmates. So let's talk about some of these programs. Okay. Let's start with the victim awareness class and the impact of crime class. What is the difference between the two, and what information is provided to inmates?
Okay, well, the victim awareness education class is a 10-week class specifically given to offenders whose crime is listed as a crime of violence. That class is usually given to offenders as soon as they come into state prison, so I always like to call that the foundation. It's a really quick 10-week class, but it gives a kind of a foundational structure to them so that they can begin to understand the physical, financial, and emotional impact that their crime had on their victim and their community. And then that kind of lays the groundwork for any other program that they do to kind of continue to build on taking responsibility and accountability for their actions. A little bit different. Oh, and the victim awareness education class, that is a requirement for parole. The impact of crime class is a voluntary class, so it's not mandatory. There's no certificate. It's a lot longer. It's a 20 to 25 week class. And that class really dives deep into really getting into the level of accountability and empathy that offenders have for those that they have harmed. It goes through many different crimes, and they have an instructional day where they learn about different crimes, they learn statistics, they kind of get more familiarized with the crime itself. And then what makes this class so significant is they have victim speakers who come in and share their story. I really think that really makes the class. The curriculum's great, but having somebody stand in front of you and share their pain and be openly vulnerable is just incredible. And it really is a great healing platform for victim and survivors, and it gives them a chance to share their story. So both classes are great. I really believe in my heart that they both have an impact and hopefully start to raise awareness of what they did and the people that they hurt so that they can put that behind them and start working on making better choices and moving to be more productive citizens.
Excellent. So I just have a quick question. Why is there even a difference? Like, why don't you offer the longer course to everybody?
You know, we get that question a lot. And a lot of offenders who take impact of crime class ask us that because they think it's so valuable. There's a couple of reasons. One, I think the reason why there's such a significant difference is because it's voluntary. Nobody wants to take a 20 to 25 week class if they don't have to. So you tend to get people that are really serious about changing behaviors, about accepting responsibility, and about being accountable for their actions and how to make amends for their actions. But we also, in that impact of crime class, we bring in survivors and we bring in victim speakers. And so the inmates in those classes are screened. The last thing we want is for a victim to come in and be re-victimized. Mm. So the people that take those classes, again, are really serious about invoking change in their life and really trying to take steps towards to be a productive citizen.
Nice. And again, you had mentioned for the impact of crime class that family members of crime victims and crime victims themselves actually come in to speak. So how does a victim or a victim's family member actually sign up to participate in something like that?
So we have a wonderful program, and the name has changed. It's been around forever, but the name has changed so much. And now this program actually is housed in the Office of Victim Advocate called Resilient Voices. So victims who and survivors who want to speak, they fill out kind of a questionnaire and send it to us, and they come into our office and share their story. Some people are perfectly fine going into state prisons to speak. Some people would prefer to speak at community events. They have victims' rights rallies in the community. Sometimes they go to local colleges or local schools or even hospitals and speak. But it's a great way, by joining that program, what we can do is anytime we get a request for a victim speaker, and sometimes it's specific to a certain crime. In April, it's Sexual Assault Awareness Month. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. So those are 2 months where we get a lot of requests for speakers from different arenas. And that gives us the opportunity to say to all these wonderful, courageous survivors who are willing to share their story, here's this platform. Would you be interested?
That's nice.
So it really gives them a great platform to be able to decide where they want to share their story and who they want to share their story in front of.
That's very, very commendable. I can imagine that it's not very easy to get up and tell a story that some of these victims have to share.
No, not at all. And I share that with offenders often. I kind of challenge them to think, you know, imagine you standing up in front of a room of complete strangers and sharing the most horrific, awful experience of your life. You know, how many of you would be willing to do that? And they do it not because they're getting paid to do it, not because they're getting some perk for doing it, because they don't want anyone else to go through what they went through. And if they can change the mind of one person to not act in that manner, it's worth it to them. And many of them will say that. And I just, their resiliency and their courage and their strength is just absolutely commendable.
Absolutely. So let's switch gears a little bit then and talk about the Inmate Apology Bank. I saw that there was that program available through your website. What exactly is it and how does it work?
The Inmate Apology Bank is a way for an inmate to actually write an apology letter to their victim. Since they are not allowed to have communication with their victim or victim's family through policy, it gives them a chance, especially for those that really, truly are remorseful and want to make sure their victims know that, to express themselves and to get that apology out in writing. That letter then comes to our office. We obviously review all letters to make sure that they're appropriate, because again, the last thing we want to do is re-victimize somebody who's already been victimized. And then if the letter is appropriate, we put it in our bank. If we have that victim associated with our office, we will reach out to them and let them know it's on file. And it's their choice whether or not they want to read it, if and when. Some people are adamant that they don't, some people are adamant that they do, and some people need a little bit of time. Mm-hmm. It's a really personal decision. I always tell offenders, don't write the letter because you're only writing it because your victim's going to see it. Write it because it's the right thing to do.
Wow. Yeah. And I bet those are very impactful. So of the victims who have accepted such apologies, how do they react to them?
You know, again, because everyone's journey is so personalized, it all depends. We have some people are so truly thankful that, you know, remorse is so incredibly important for their journey. So knowing that the offender's remorseful is very important to them. For some people, they're just not there yet. So they may read it and appreciate the fact that it was written, but aren't really sure that they can trust all the words that are there. And really, again, I think that the fact that they're even willing to accept it says a lot. People get there in their own time. We have some people that said, absolutely not, I never want to read an apology letter. And then some years go by, and then they're at a place where they want to read it. And again, that's something that we stress to offenders. It's not about whether your victim reads it. It's about if the words that you're writing are actually true, and if you're meaning what you're writing. One thing that our office has started doing recently is we do inmate apology writing symposiums. I can't imagine how incredibly difficult it is for an offender to write an apology letter, or for anybody in that, you know, to write an apology letter. It's a very personal, private thing. And so sometimes people have a lot of they know kind of what they want to say, but they have a really hard time getting it down on paper. So we have these writing symposiums, so we make sure that they hit some key elements. A lot of victims want to know what they're doing. They want to know, have you changed? Have you taken steps to improve yourself? Apologies aren't about length, they're about meaning. And an apology letter doesn't have to be 3 pages long. It can be a paragraph if it's sincere and from the heart.
Mm. So if the victim does take the letter and reads it, can a relationship begin after that? Can they begin to correspond with each other, even though DOC policy doesn't allow that with the victim?
So that's when it kind of goes out of our hands. So if they would read the letter and say, you know what, I'd really like to correspond with them, there's two different types of courses we can go with that. If they just want a one-time kind of, you know, back and forth with the offender, if they have some questions for them, they can always go through our victim offender dialogue program. If they want something that's very short term and really just a one time thing, if they want an ongoing relationship where they would be continuously writing the offender, they would have to get permission from the superintendent of that institution, you know, explaining why they would want that. And then it's out of our hands. The superintendent would then make that decision.
Okay. And have you had cases that have gone ahead like that?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And a lot of times, they're very appropriate for the dialogue program. It's, again, the dialogue program is really supposed to be a one-time thing. So if they're looking for a relationship to be ongoing, that's where we encourage them then to write the superintendent asking for permission to correspond with them on an ongoing basis.
Okay. And let's get into the victim offender dialogue program, since you've mentioned it now a couple times. Tell our listeners what it's about.
Okay, so the very, very important thing about the victim offender dialogue program is that it's victim initiated. We get requests from offenders all the time wanting to meet with their victim, and unfortunately, that's not the model that we use, and that's not the way that we go. So victims would contact our office and state that they would want to meet with their offender face to face. The process is so organic and so incredible, but it's also very intentional in making sure that it's done correctly. We have over 65 trained facilitators. In fact, last year, many of the OVA staff were also trained. Mm-hmm. It's a week-long training. It's a very intensive training. And so the victim has to request it. We do an intake with that victim to really make sure that this is what they want to do. You know, sometimes people hear something and they think that's what they want to do, but when you actually give them all the information, they maybe decide it's not. So we want to make sure that they're absolutely on the same page. And then our next step is contacting the offender. We would never force anyone to do anything they didn't want to do. So each side has to be willing to go through this process. So while we talk to the victim and do an intake with the victim, we do the same thing with the offender. There's a lot of misnomers and misinformation about the victim offender dialogue program. So we want the opportunity to be able to explain to offenders exactly what this program is before they make a decision whether they want to participate.
That's good.
Knowledge is power. And I really feel like if they understand that it's, you know, some people think that it's just going to be the victim coming in and screaming at them, or it's going to be that the victim's going to automatically forgive them. And could those two things happen? Sure. But that's not the intention. That's not what we're looking for. We're looking for the best possible outcome of the dialogue and really trying to meet the needs of the victim first and foremost, but also the offender. So once each side agrees, then two facilitators are assigned to the case and they meet with the victim and the offender separately multiple times and do prep with them just to kind of make sure that they're on the same page, that they understand what's going on. They don't share with the offender what the victim's, you know, why the victim's wanting to do this, but just to make sure that they are understanding everything. And so I think that that's really helpful. And then after each side is ready to go, then they meet face to face. And it's incredibly emotional. It's an incredibly amazing thing to see. Sometimes victims have questions. Sometimes those questions could be, you know, you're the last one that saw my loved one alive. You know, what were their last words? How were they? Or sometimes if it's the direct victim themselves, they want to know why. Why them? Sometimes the victim wants to offer forgiveness. Sometimes the victims just want the offender to know how their life has changed as a result of the crime.
Right.
We do have, a couple years ago, we did have a video done that's called Beyond Conviction, and it highlights three victim offender dialogues in Pennsylvania. And it was really powerful to see because all three were completely different. All three victims had completely different reasons for wanting to meet with the offender, but all three were successful.
Oh, amazing. Just amazing services that you provide. So we're getting to the end of the podcast, and I just wanted to talk real briefly, how can victims register with OVA and tell everybody why it's important and what the benefits are of doing so?
Okay, well, first and foremost, you know, in light of everything that's going on in the world right now, OVA has been up and functioning a little bit differently, as is everyone else, but we've been up and functioning and be able to provide services to victims regardless throughout this crisis. The best way at this point to register would be to call our office at 1-800-563-6399. We do have victim assistance coordinators that are there from about 8 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon right now, just because of a little bit adjusted schedule. Otherwise, they can leave a message and someone will call them back. They can always, you know, send an inquiry through our website. There's an email address on our website that they could send that inquiry to. But registration with our office is key for so many people, especially people that have safety concerns. One thing that I don't think people realize is that our office will notify you from the time the offender comes into state prison until they're off of supervision. And so if they want to provide input into the parole process, if they want to know what prison they're at, if they have safety concerns and they need someone to talk to, we work really well with our local advocates. Obviously, we cover the whole state, so 67 counties, everybody does things a little bit differently. And if we have a victim call us from an area and needs safety planning and is really, truly scared of their offender being released, we're going to hook them up with local services in their area so that they're going to receive the best possible safety planning that they can get with somebody that knows their area well and can give them their area's resources. At the same time, we're there just to answer any questions. There's a lot of misinformation. Sometimes people will tell a victim that their offender has been released and they haven't. So really just being there to make sure that all the rights that are given to them under the Crime Victims Bill of Rights are afforded to them and that they have the right to be notified when things come up with their offender. They have the right to be heard when the offender is coming up for parole review or any kind of review that's going to be allowing them to be released.
That's great. They do have a lot of rights. And I did want to just mention, I've talked to some people, victims who they don't understand the difference between registering with OVA and registering online with the Savin or VineLink.
Sure.
So explain that.
So registration with Savin is great, but the only thing that it's going to give a victim is the physical movement of the offender. So it's going to tell the victim when an offender moves from different places. What it's not going to do is give that detailed information like our office would. It's not going to tell them, hey, your offender is up for parole review. Would you like to provide input? And that input could be either in person to the parole board or via letter or oral comments over the phone. Savin's not going to be able to tell them what the outcome of that parole hearing is. Savin's not going to tell them, be able to do safety planning with them and tell them the exact date the offender is getting out. They'll tell them after the fact. And there's a 24-hour delay with Savin. So not to diminish Savin at all. It's a great tool to use. But for people that really have safety concerns and really want their voices heard, the only way that's going to happen is if they register with the Office of Victim Advocate.
Perfect. Karen, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been such a really important podcast, I believe. We have a lot of crime victims out there, and we want to make sure that they get the benefits that they have the rights to. So I appreciate you joining us.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. And listeners, don't forget that you can always learn more about the Department of Corrections by visiting www.cor.pa.gov. And of course, to access information on the Office of Victim Advocate and the services that they provide, please visit their website at www.ova.pa.gov. That concludes this episode of Lockup Lowdown. We'll see you next time.